Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 483 for comics originally released on November 9th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC as part of the Young Animals line is Mother Panic number 1. This is by Jody Hauser and Tommy Lee Edwards. This is the fourth launch of the Young Animals line, and I'm kind of glad it was the last of the bunch. I think if it started with this, I might have rethought getting some of the others. This wasn't a bad comic per se, but it just didn't sell me on itself. This is firmly set in Gotham City. I mean, we even get a Batman appearance here, but it doesn't feel like it kind of had to be set in Gotham City. And to a degree, it kind of weakened the story a little for me, because you've got this person in costume with this jet bike with wings sort of thing. It's actually a cool looking vehicle. With a landing pad or whatever at the top of a skyscraper. And I'm like, how has Batman not noticed this? So there's a suspension of disbelief that I was having a little bit of a problem with. And the bottom line is I just didn't really get to like the lead character, Violet, in this issue. And maybe it was the bouncing back and forth between the present day and 15 years ago that didn't help me get into the story. But it just, I don't know where they're going, and I don't know why I should care.
I was kind of on the other end of the spectrum from you. I thought this was the most accessible for people coming in cold and reading this. I thought it was the most normal of all the comics in this line, and I thought it had I agree. I don't know that it needed to be set in Gotham, but I think that little connection probably is helpful. There might be some fun stuff that they can do in the future. I agree. The main character, not likable, and tough to root for so far. But she did have some redeeming qualities with her mother and that stuff at the end. I thought that was reasonable. And there was some things to like. I mean, there's definitely some unlikability too as well. The bouncing around, it did get a little confusing. I'm talking myself out of liking this book.
The more I talk about it. That's not my goal.
of the Young Animal, I think this is probably my favorite so far. Just because it wasn't so weird, and just for weirdness' sake, some of those I was getting that feeling that they were just trying to be odd, and this one, I think there's something here. I don't know if there's enough to say, hey, you've got to read the next issue, but it's okay.
Well, you bring up a couple of interesting points I want to discuss. Accessibility. I think you've got a really valid point there, because this is starting, aside from being set in Gotham and having a Batman cameo, it's got a blank slate. Whereas the other properties all had previous material they were drawing on. Shade the Changing Girl is based on Shade the Changing Man. Cave Carson's a longtime character in the DC universe going back decades. And then the first one, which was, I'm blanking on what it is. What was that for? Doom Patrol. Obviously has a very long pedigree within the DC universe. So for me, those are easier to get into, but I'm not going to claim accessibility there, because I think I might be wrong to do so, because it didn't have to be as accessible for me because I already knew the characters. Whereas here, there was nothing to really know ahead of time. So that was a perspective I hadn't really thought about. Your other comment about weird for weird's sake and this being the most normal of the bunch, I think you're completely right on that. Again, not something I was really even giving any thought to, because to me weird for weird's sake is not good, but this is a story that, despite its level or lack of weirdness, I think it just needed, the story needs a little more time for me to really kind of make up my mind of, do I like it, do I not? It was just kind of there. And I've already got the other next few issues on pre-order, so it's going to get another few issues for me to determine what I think of it. I just wish it had come out of the gate stronger.
Yeah, I don't feel like I would have to read anymore. I think I'm going to read at least one more. but I don't feel like there was anything here in his first issue that was convincing of that. It's because I felt the others in the Young Animal line were kind of uneven and not for me. As I've read more of them, I like them less. So, kind of by default, I think maybe this one might be the closest thing that could work for me. So I might give it another shot. And that is about as lukewarm of an endorsement as you can get. I don't think it's a bad comic. I think it's pretty good, but it's not the engaging ride that sometimes I want out of a first issue. Be that realistic or unrealistic expectation. That's what I want. I want this really engaging ride that propels me into the next issue. And this isn't quite that.
No, I would agree with it. Again, it's not bad, but it failed to really sell me on the concept, on the tone, the style, the dialogue, the plot, the you know, there was nothing that I came out of this thinking, you know, this one aspect I really like. It was just kind of there. And there were a few things where they were very much teasing us with something. It's like, well, if you'd only seen what was behind that door, you know, this might make more sense. It's like, yeah, but you didn't show us.
And it's weird to see Batman on a panel and an F-bomb on the panel right next to it. I don't know how often I've seen the adult language in a Batman book like that.
Or more appropriately, Batman in an adult language comic like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Lest somebody get the mistaken impression this is a Batman book, because it most certainly is not. He just happens to make a quick cameo. Alfred also shows up. Mm-hmm. And really, those could have been replaced with almost anybody else.
And there's nothing Gotham-centric here that where it needs to be in Gotham. At least so far, I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, and that was kind of my take on it, too. It could have just as easily been Marvel's New York City, and that could have been Jarvis instead of Alfred, and it could have been Moon Knight instead of Batman, or, you know, wherever. There's nothing Gotham-centric about this, and that's not a good or a bad thing, it just is. You know, it's just, they've made the decision to set it in Gotham City, and I'm curious as to why and how that will benefit the series.
And then there's a backup story, a couple of pages of backup story about Gotham Talk Radio, and I'm not sure that really sold me on being firmly rooted in Gotham either, necessary to be rooted in Gotham. It just was, but it didn't feel authentic to that space.
Let's talk about this a little, because it's about essentially a radio DJ or whatever, not DJ, a radio personality in Gotham talking about stuff. First page of the three is a 9-panel grid. We establish a couple of people as being Gothamites, I guess. And the next two page is 16 panels, you know, or actually 12, 3x4 grids. No, I take it back. It's 3x3, 3x4, and then 4x4. So the second page, we're getting more of the voiceover of the radio guy. Something happens at the bottom of that page, and then the next page is essentially 16 reaction shots of people I haven't really gotten to know well enough, for the most part, other than Alfred, who's one of them, to really care how they react. And then it was a third of the story was reaction, over a third of the story based on the number of panels.
Yeah, it felt to me like there were more reaction shots from people that they didn't establish in the previous two pages. Now, it's probably not the case, but it just felt like there were way more people reacting to that, what happened, and we hadn't established who they were and where they were while the talking was going on. So it felt weird.
Well, and the pacing of that three-page story was off, because I would say the pivotal moment was about halfway through the number of panels, maybe slightly thereafter. It was one that I read, and I'm like, what was I expected to take out of this? And again, it wasn't bad. It just left me a little puzzled. And not in a, ooh, there's a mystery to solve, in the story. The mystery to solve kind of was the story, if you know what I mean. Or was what was the story. This is one that I didn't hate it,
yeah.
But if I need to cut titles and I've got more than enough on my list as it is, this currently is one that may get cut. Again, I've got a few more on order, so it gets a little bit of a grace period. And I like to give a series a couple issues to get rolling, maybe a full initial story arc. But this is not promising so far.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm borderline C plus, B minus, and I think I'm going to go with the C plus. It's just it's not a bad comic, but it's not a great comic. It's not a really good comic that I can wholeheartedly endorse either. But there might be something there as we progress, and I do want to give it one more, or otherwise I've written off the entire Young Animal line awfully soon, and maybe not given it its full due.
Wow, that is kind of fast. Because I'm enjoying Doom Patrol. I may be an issue or so behind on that, but I've read the first two. And so far, I've only read the first issue of the other books. But, you know, with this, I'm going to go with a C-. I was tempted to give a D+, but it's not that it's bad. It's just that it didn't wow me. And it's one that, for a first issue, it was below expectations. It was below average. And were I getting stuff just off the rack on a month-to-month, week-to-week kind of basis, there was nothing in this to draw me to that next issue other than, well, Batman's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to do better than that.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm in a transition, I think, in my habits at DC, because for so long, through attrition, it had kind of just dropped off title after title in the New 52 and was gravitating more and more to the Vertigo line for my DC books. And now with Vertigo kind of lessening and the Rebirth titles really capturing my imagination, I'm flipping the other way, and I'm really heavy in the main line of DC and less interested in some of these French titles. So kind of come full circle.
Well, and I think you and I tend to have a little bit different taste in comics and stuff. And honestly, I would have expected the Young Animal line to fall a little bit more into your wheelhouse than mine.
Definitely. Definitely. That's how, on paper, I would have thought it would have lined up as well.
Interesting. That doesn't seem to be the case so far.
Not so far, no.
Huh. Well, we'll see if you give them another chance. We'll see how long I stick with some of this stuff and what other titles they do beyond the four, or if they just stick with the four for now, which I think is plenty for them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think... Also, I'm liking half the Hanna-Barbera line. You know, I wouldn't have guessed that. You know, so there have been some surprises.
Yeah. Well, in the Hanna-Barbera, I think that line is just the mindset behind Future Quest is so different than, say, Scooby Apocalypse or Wacky Raceland, just to be a little confusing. Because, again, I feel Future Quest is very true to the old school stuff. It's a modernization. It's a retooling, certainly, but it's highly iconically recognizable as those characters. Whereas, you know, they went in some different directions with the Scooby gang, certainly, and just I think a very radical departure with the Wacky Raceland stuff. And of course, Flintstones is right on that border of being iconically Flintstones, yet something new and different in and of itself almost. So they kind of scattered the approaches there quite a bit, more so than I had expected, given the way they initially pitched it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was really a pleasant surprise.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yep.
This is Invincible Iron Man number one. And just for people listening to this in the far-flung future, this is, again, stuff that shipped the week of November 9th, 2016. I clarify that because I have lost count of how many Invincible Iron Man number ones there have been in recent years. There have been a fair number. There were two things about the cover I found a little misleading. First, it states that Riri Williams is Ironheart. Of course, they're calling the book Invincible Iron Man, but apparently the lead character is going to be called Ironheart, not Iron Man, because that's not confusing. It's misleading because she never actually adopts the name or this armor in this issue, but hey, we're just getting started, so give it time. The other thing I found quite misleading on the cover is above where it says Invincible Iron Man, it credits Brian Michael Bendis as writing this. And he is indeed the writer of this, but I find that incredibly misleading because this, I think, had more story than any Marvel comic I've read from Bendis in ages. This thing, it really gave us, I thought, a solid background on Riri, who she is, why she is destined to become a hero, and just did, I think, a great job kind of establishing her present-day situation and her backstory in the span of a single issue. So I was quite pleased by that.
There was a cover that was dropped from this title.
That's right, there was.
Riri had been drawn a little too sexy for a 15-year-old on it. So I'm wondering if it was a variant cover or a primary cover, and then they swapped this one in at the last minute as the primary, perhaps.
It was a retailer exclusive, I think, for... Oh, shoot, I'm forgetting which retailer. It was a retailer exclusive, though.
Oh, okay.
Midtown Comics, maybe?
Well, I can't make an excuse for them, then.
It's a nice cover. I like the cover. I like this variant on the armor or whatever. It's a nice, sleek look to it.
It doesn't really exist in the book.
Yeah. She hasn't built it yet. And it's funny because the armor she's got is reminiscent of Tony's first, you know, gray armor. Big, bulky, that kind of thing. So, again, they're doing some parallels between Riri and Tony that are kind of fun. If they can keep up this level of quality, this amount of story, I think this could definitely be a breakout title for DC. Or not for DC, for Marvel. It'd be wild for DC. They do a good job setting this character up. I see some parallels between Riri and Moon Girl. You know, the super genius level IQ, etc. But this one really kind of won me over in terms of, I don't know that we need yet another Iron Man-ish character, but this is one that I think is fun, I think is cool, and I think will stick around long after Tony eventually gets back into the armor, which we know at some point he will do.
So do we know what happened officially?
Not yet.
Okay, so is that coming out next week?
Another issue of Civil War, I think, might be coming out next week.
It'd
be the week after that, I think. It's not next week.
Okay.
But that would be the 7th issue, and they may wait until the 8th of the 7 issues to tell us what happens to Tony.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I don't want to go through this again.
We're running low on Iron Man titles to review at this point.
I liked it. I thought it was really good. I like her a lot. She's easy to root for. Fits very much in the Ms. Marvel and Miles Morales space. You know, they could hang out and be buddies. I could see that happening, or she could go hang out and be a champion for sure. And she may have been had a cameo in there. I don't know if she did or not in that first issue. But yeah, it's really great. I did have a question during the picnic scene.
Mm-hmm.
Does her friend get just wounded?
The friend is killed.
And then so at the end...
Same with the stepdad.
They're both dead. So then at the end, that's just her mom then?
That's her mom.
There's no friend that comes in and helps.
That's at least how I read it.
Because as she's pushing the button, there's a very young-looking woman next to her. And I thought, was that her mom? Because she looks very young.
It's clearly her mom because she identifies as such when the box arrives.
Okay.
But otherwise, yeah, it was a little unclear.
That little confusion on my part aside, I thought it was really a fun story and a good introduction and a good use of powers and the fledgling use of powers and figuring it all out as you go. Very early Spider-Man-esque and a lot of fun. And, you know, the touch of Tony Stark AI there at the end was cool and will be a fun support for her going forward. I think there's plenty to do there. And yeah, really a nice debut.
Yeah, they did some good stuff. Again, I'm still curious what happened with Tony. We'll figure that out eventually or be told that eventually. Was not surprised by the AI Tony in this, because again, we'd gotten that a few weeks ago over in Infamous Iron Man, I believe. So when she's saying, oh, I just need an AI, it's like, geez, I wonder where that's going. A little telegraphed, but hey, it played out well. It was fun. The other thing I really want to call out is Stefano Caselli, the artist here, I think just did a terrific job throughout. You've got kind of the robots fighting monsters sort of look at one place. You've got, again, the picnic scene. You've got a variety of things we're getting in this issue, and they're all really well drawn. The art was a definite plus for me in this.
Yeah.
Again, I think this is a strong official launch for the Riri Williams character. Again, we've seen her in previous issues elsewhere. But I think, like I said, she's going to stick around for a while. I'm just wondering if at some point down the line we're going to get a team up of, you know, Tony Stark is Iron Man, Rhodey is War Machine. I mean, yeah, sure, he's dead right now, but give it time. He'll be back. Aren't they all? Pepper Potts is Rescue, Riri here is Ironheart, and then I think they've got still the Iron Patriot suit running around with its own AI. I mean, they could actually field an entire team of just Iron people. Give it time. It will happen.
I like it. I like it. Iron Army, Iron Avengers, something like that. Sounds fun.
Something.
New number one. Marvel Now.
Yeah. I would toss Iron Fist in there just for the hell of it.
He used to be so out of place. He would feel so so under-armored.
But he could actually stand around those guys and survive with his... I mean, he's agile. He's got the chi, the martial arts stuff. You know, he would... I don't want to say be the Batman of the group, but the non-powered one of the... It would be funny.
Yeah.
You know, clearly he'd get the invitation by mistake.
That would be great. That would be great. They probably have an automated invitation system like you, and it would just pull all the irons.
Yeah, just a minor glitch in the Avenger computer of, oh, we need the Iron Man type people, you know, oops. It would be a good one shot or good annual, if nothing else. This was, again, a fun issue. I really appreciated the amount of story we got in here, the amount of character exploration stuff. I really felt we got to know Riri, and like you said, she was easy to root for. For me, this was a solid A, and definitely a title I would recommend at this point.
Yep, A minus for me. Good stuff. Really, really enjoyed it. And that's yet another onto my burgeoning pull list that is going on there.
So how big is your pull list right now?
For me, it's well over 30 a week. So I was trying to keep it in the teens for a while, and I've now given that up. And I'm well over 30. And sometimes 35 in a week, and it's really hard for me to get through those.
No, I can understand that. 30 a week is quite a bit. I'm still doing well above that, but I'm also still, as we'll find out after our next review, still behind.
Yeah.
That having been said, shall we move on to our next book?
Yep.
This is Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Adventures number 1 from IDW. It's co-published with DC. And this is an animated take on the team up we'd gotten. Was that last year, I guess, with the Batman and the Turtles?
Nah, I don't think it was last year, was it?
I'm trying to remember. It was a little while ago. When did we review that? Because I'm not seeing it earlier on the list for this year, but I thought for sure we had talked about it. Maybe I'm just not seeing it because it's well into the year. Anyways, I really enjoyed the Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle crossover they had done earlier. Again, I forget exactly when that was. And I recall talking at the time that if they were to do a sequel to it, which I wanted, it'd be fun to team up the Robins with the Turtles. Alas, they decided it would be more fun to do the cartoon versions of these characters. And I'm not saying they were wrong. I'm saying part of this fell a little flat for me. When we open on what looks to be a Batman riff and we get Michelangelo doing the I Am Vengeance, I Am the Night from the Batman Adventures cartoon, I'm like, really? That's where you went? And it wasn't bad, but it just, it started the issue off a little too, for lack of a better term, cartoony.
Yeah.
Both in terms of tone, but also very much with the Turtles in terms of the art style.
Now, how many covers would you say this has? What's your guess?
87, maybe? I don't know.
Okay. I'm reading the review copy from the IDW site, and it has 23 covers included, plus 15 additional thumbnails of covers for a grand total of at least, what is that, 38 covers?
Jeez.
And that's just what is included in the review copy, which I hope to God that's all of them, because that's a lot of covers.
On the inside back cover, they only include 15 and then another 6, including the blank variant, on the preceding page. So that's only, 21 of them? That's a crazy number of covers.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, how often do they get a chance to essentially, for an IDW book, to have a Batman variant cover legitimately?
True.
So, I mean, I get that. this issue.
But I was complaining about the size of the download.
That's right.
This is why I have 57 pages and 20 pages of story.
What gets me when I get a press PDF like that is not just the size of it, but it takes a little bit. You're halfway through the PDF before you get to the start of the story.
Yeah.
It's like, that's really? I think they should have done the alternate covers or variant covers or whatever as a separate PDF that was available. Because I think seeing them is sometimes very educational in terms of how it sells and how the perceived demand is for the book. This issue was mainly set up, but we get a good fight between Clayface and the Turtles, so it's not like it's all set up, no payoff. I felt Batman and the Turtles, each side of the crossover, got a decent amount of screen time. If anything, I would say it leaned a little heavier towards the Turtles than Batman, but not too much so. The thing, though, that just kept coming out to me was the Turtles in April seem really young. And I get that the Turtles are teenagers, but usually they seem to be on the upper end of that range. And here they seem to be at the absolute lower end of it. And again, that's not a negative. It's not a critical flaw or anything. It was just something I wasn't expecting. But I'm not even sure which cartoon series these Turtles are from, because I really haven't watched much of the Turtle cartoons over the years. I'm more familiar from the live action stuff, actually, as live action as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles can be, at the very least. The crossover between worlds and stuff was happening again. I felt it was a little just kind of thrown out there as, yep, it can happen, and not really dwelled on, which is fine. But I wasn't digging this as much as I did the previous miniseries. And maybe part of that's the cartoony style. Part of it's just these turtles feel younger than I expect them to be. And frankly, I'd have rather they'd done a straight sequel to the previous miniseries versus doing a one in the animated style versus the comic book style.
Yeah, I mean, was my impression that the previous miniseries was well received and it sold well. My brother really, really enjoyed it, and he's a big fan of the Turtles properties. I'm not. I've seen a few, watched them with my little brother because he was such a fan, but they never really connected with me. And of course, I also am the one person in the world that has never seen Batman the animated series. So
really,
yeah, and I don't. So I don't really know that world either. So this is a mashup of kind of two iterations and younger versions of these properties that I don't know. And this is not for me, and that's okay. If you're fans of those properties, you might be able to embrace the art style and the storytelling, and it might work for you. Unfortunately for me, big swing and a miss, and it's not something that I'll be continuing with.
I can understand that, particularly if you're not familiar with either set of cartoons. I'm frankly very surprised you haven't seen Batman the Animated Series to any degree. It's
yeah, you've already chastised me for this before on a previous episode, and I think there's been letters on the forum about it, and I was given homework to watch those, and I failed you all. I failed you all. So
that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. No, seriously, you're such a Batman fan that for you to have not seen it is, on the one hand, unfortunate. On the other hand, it's great because you've got this wonderful take on Batman out there waiting for you when you finally have the time to partake of it. Because I think the Bruce Timm, Paul Dini world of the Batman animated series was just a really great realization of the Batman mythology. And Kevin Conroy became the iconic voice of Batman for an entire generation because of it. And very legitimately so. He does a terrific job. So, you know, if you don't have that coming into this, again, that's would be one of the two anchors, the other being whichever variant of the Turtles cartoon this is based on. And I wish there was some indication here as to which cartoon that was. I don't know if it's the current Nickelodeon one or not.
90s. I don't think it's the early 90s version.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. It may be the current one on Nickelodeon. I don't know. But Nickelodeon's on here, but of course they own the property now, so there's that. for me, it's good. It's just not as good as the previous crossover, which really clicked with me. And, you know, I'm sure I'll enjoy this as it continues, but it was not the strong follow-up I had really hoped for and wanted, but I'm going to go with a B-minus on this. That having been said, if somehow you fall into the category that Drew apparently does of not having seen either set of cartoons or Batman animated series, maybe it's not for you. But yeah. If you haven't, you're a Batman fan, you really got to go watch.
What I've been told. I've been told many times. For me, it's a D+, and it's probably more about me than it is about the book, but I just didn't like it, and see no reason to continue.
Fair enough. Absolutely can understand that. Do you have any plans to see the Batman Adventures cartoon? Or Batman animated series, I mean?
You know, if I'm walking through Walmart and that first season is on Blu-ray and it's cheap, or, you know, it's on Amazon, and I'll do that. I'll pick it up at some point. Stocking stuffers for those of you buying
Christmas. If that is not the most blatant, underhanded kind of, hey, send me something request I have ever heard.
Dear Warner Brothers, I've been plugging your stuff for quite some time. You owe me.
Yeah. No, actually, I can understand, though, just finding it at a good price, whatever. It's fun stuff. I think when you do watch it, you will enjoy it. If you ever get around to that is.
Yeah. I mean, I've been wanting to watch The Killing Joke. It's out on Blu-ray now. So,
The sad reality is we're not at a shortage of really good things to be reading or watching right now.
Yeah.
I probably have enough that I could spend the entire Thanksgiving weekend just watching DC animated stuff. Maybe not the full weekend, but stuff that I haven't already watched. I'm not gonna do that. I've got other plans, but
they've got to be pushing 20 films at this point, right?
Oh, geez. Just between the Justice League stuff, the Batman stuff they've done, I've got a sizable stack of the DVDs and Blu-rays piled up to watch when I get the chance. Killing Joke among them, Batman the Dark Knight or whatever the animated version of that is in there. There's tons. Absolutely.
And not to make excuses, but I think, and Sam can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he also falls in the same category as we're around the same age, and we both missed the mark on Batman the animated series and never watched it. I think. Well, I may have misheard that.
And I can understand not having caught it when it aired. Just you weren't in cartoon watching mode.
No excuse. No self-respecting comics podcaster should not have read it. Watched it.
No, I didn't say that. I think there are certain podcasters it's absolutely inappropriate for. If you're more into the indie stuff and not Batman or whatever, it's not for you. But as somebody who you've described yourself as a big Batman fan, this had some great Batman stuff. I would say between the Batman and the Animated Series, and the various names it went under after that, his appearance is over in the Superman Animated Series, Justice League Unlimited. There's just some really awesome Batman stuff out there. And again, I think Kevin Conroy is an iconic version of the character. So at some point you should check it out. And no doubt the next time the subject will come up, you'll mention that you still haven't, but that's fine.
No promises.
Well, like I said, there's plenty of stuff fighting for our attention. You know, it's easy to not have read everything or watched everything. It's just the way it is these days. And speaking of which, I am still behind on my reading. I'm actually 7 comics further ahead than I was this time last week. I've read more than I got, which is nice. But I've still got basically a short box worth of comics to read. About 103, I think, if I've counted it correctly. Except for one comic, finished the week of October 19th. That one comic is the Star Trek Boldly Go #1, which takes place after the movie I still haven't seen yet. So one of the things on the to-do list is to, now that I've got Star Trek Beyond on Blu-ray, to actually watch Star Trek Beyond on Blu-ray and then go read that comic. And probably, I think I've already gotten the one after it, actually.
And then podcast on that movie.
Definitely podcast on the movie after I watch it. Absolutely. That'll probably be one of the things I try to do either this coming weekend or Thanksgiving weekend. There are a couple of other movies. As to when that episode will go out, that's another question. 'Cause, yeah.
Well, What's off limits on a gluten-free Thanksgiving?
Anything with gluten. That's a very unhelpful answer, isn't it? Gluten is
so in... turkey's good. Mashed potatoes okay?
They can be, but they're not usually not. You can get mashed potatoes that are okay. Gluten is in wheat, oat, barley, and rye. So wheat is often used as like a filler in various things. There's also the dairy allergy I've got, which is as likely to knock out the mashed potatoes as anything else.
If there's cream in the mashed potatoes or butter.
Yeah. I mean, if it's literally just a potato and you've mashed the hell out of it, that'd be fine. I think the potato would be upset, but you know, hey.
Yeah.
But stuffing is usually out. Again, you can make variants of it all that's gluten-free, but if I were to like go to a Thanksgiving buffet or something, I'd be out of luck in a lot of areas.
That sucks, man.
Even the ham and turkey sometimes, depending how it is basted and prepared and whatnot, not
caring. What it's brined in and things like that. Oh, man.
I can't tell you how many times I've gotten the it's just meat argument, which is just wrong.
Which makes you want to punch someone. At least you have your sister, so there's strength in numbers. The two of you can kind of watch each other's back. That's good.
And our parents are really supportive and accommodating on this, which helps a lot.
At least while you're within earshot.
No.
And then they're like, honey, get out the Bob Evans mashed potatoes. They're gone.
I'm not saying they don't go have glutinous stuff when we're not eating with them. I'm saying when we are eating with them, they're very accommodating. And at least tell me which of the stuffings will kill me and which one I can eat. But they're going to eat what they're going to eat. But they're good about making sure it's safe for us, which is appreciated because I cannot tell you what a pain it is during the holidays. Because you've got, again, this is a huge digression for people who don't care about my food allergies, but you know, hey, I talk about comics most of the time. I think I'm okay with this.
Yeah. In lieu of ads, we occasionally talk about stuff like this.
In lieu of financial support, emotional support would be appreciated. Because, I mean, this is the time of year, potlucks and things that.
And you got to be that guy.
Yeah,
that's tough, man. Because there's sweets everywhere, and it's all got to be gluten-y.
And I've had cases in the past where trying to have a group meal that is gluten-free is seen literally as punishing other people.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying not to get, you know, severely physically punished by the otherwise poisonous stuff. And it's you know, I don't want to inconvenience people. I certainly don't want to inflict gluten-free stuff on people who don't want it. But it's... it is a source of frustration for me at times. And I'll be honest. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that I can't have when it comes to food and stuff, you know? So, of course, I indulge on the comic side. Make up for it, you know? It's retail therapy, I guess, but it's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, because it's something you have to constantly monitor and be cognizant of wherever I go, I can find something to eat easily. And I just take that for granted.
Everybody does. It's so easy too, and I used to be in the same boat. But it's one of those things that I'm thankful for how many places there are that I can go eat these days. I was literally thinking about it this morning as I was driving to work, that there are at least four places in easy range of the office where I can have an actual hamburger with a bun that's actually a really good hamburger. In most of those places, half the places, I can even get french fries. But again, not a shared fryer, not always safe, yada, yada. But it's something that a lot of people just don't think about. You know, hey, let's go grab a bite to eat, you know, suddenly becomes a bit of an ordeal. But, you know, that's the way life is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
back to the business at hand. Numbers are out. So I'm looking forward to the new Mayo reports that are coming out. You have probably have already started recording those. Right.
I am recording on this weekend with TJ and next week with Sam. I haven't actually had time to go check CBR.com to know if my article's gone up or not. I was actually I think I did a better job than usual this time around. Hopefully people will agree. It's one of those things that sometimes I feel it's like, you know, I've said certain things over and over again. Can I find a new angle? Can I come at it a different way or, you know, whatever? Or at least say something that's not blatantly obvious. I probably fail on that. Repeatedly, but you know, hey.
No, I think I recognize the extra effort in listening. I'm about halfway through your comics Mayo Report with Sam, and you know, you can just tell that you're, you know, putting a lot more time and effort into looking at these, slicing these numbers in different ways to try to uncover new things about them. And appreciate it very much, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, because it's fascinating. And it, and you would think 10 years in that you would run out of ways to look at these numbers.
Well,
but it's really cool that you're finding new ways still.
Some of it is just finding new ways. Some of it is having to find new ways. Because really, I would argue back in the end of May, with the DC Universe Rebirth launching, it got to the point where both publishers had a number of titles that were shipping multiple times a month. So I still think issue-to-issue comparisons are vital, because it's the sales trends on individual titles over time that make up the top 300. But it becomes so swayed these days by, well, did the title even ship that month? That having to start to look at it from more of a month-to-month perspective in addition, it shines a different light on it. And it's again, fun to take a different look at it. It lets me play with a couple of programming techniques and toys and stuff that, you know, I'm just a geek. I like to do that kind of stuff. I think this year, comics have undergone a fundamental shift due to the increased frequency of release. And just anecdotally, I'm hearing enough cases of people, it's like, well, I'm not having enough time to read what I want and stuff like that, that I think we're hitting the saturation point of how many comics and how quickly they can release given comic titles before there's a little bit of a pushback sales-wise, potentially. Preview spotlight deadline is going to be the morning of December 10th. Hopefully people will spend some time, you know, before the holidays go crazy and stuff, sending in some clips. We had a great turnout this last time. About, 2 hours of submissions and stuff, which is awesome. The teleconference is going to be December 17th, 7 p.m. Central. We just had the one for November this past weekend. A lot of really good discussions and stuff. A lot of fun. And then, of course, people should start thinking about the picks for the best of the year for 2016. We usually record that early in January once all the books of 2016 have come out. I'm a little bit of, I guess, a literalist. I always hate the best of 2016 lists that are coming out this time of year, you know, late November, because it's like, there's a whole month left. You know, it shortchanges stuff at the end sometimes, and I don't think that's right. But that's me.
Besides that final shipping week, that deserves it. That deserves to be skipped, usually.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Is it likely to fundamentally change somebody's list for the year? No, but it's not going to be under consideration next year. And it's kind of just not fair to the creators who have stuff released then. You know?
Yeah, those 7 books need our attention.
Sometimes it's 7 books, sometimes it's a lot more. Because Christmas and New Year fall on a Sunday this year, we may not have a skip week. I really haven't gone to check to find out if that's going to be the case. Yeah. If it's a regular shipping week, then it definitely should be included. If it's a skip week, essentially, there'll be like one thing from each publisher, each major publisher, then it's not that big of a deal to go read those things when they come out and include them or not include them as you see fit. So.
Oh, no. But sometimes it's pretty laughable, the stuff we have to choose from.
Yes, there have been some times where the last shipment of the year,
yeah,
the pick is, well, I guess it's that DC book. I guess it's this Marvel book. And, we've got 3 choices for other.
Wasn't there one year where we did every single book that came out?
Yes. Yes, there was.
I thought we did that.
There's a certain ludicrousness of that.
Yeah.
We'll get
that list of categories up soon. And so you'll have a month or so to get your predictions in and your favorites so that we can read them on the air.
Yeah, it's always fun hearing what the highlights were for the listeners over the course of the year. That's actually gotten a couple of books onto my list, Scooby-Doo Team-Up being a good example of that.
Exactly. Yeah, me too.
And again, there have been a couple of things that I've just lucked into over the course of this year. Red Team, Double Tap Center Mass from Dynamite, definitely one of them. I'm looking forward to that 5th issue coming out in another week or so, because where that 4th one wound off, it's like, damn, I want to know what happens next. I didn't see that coming. So it continues to be a brilliant read.
Yeah.
Really enjoy. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, I think it does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Nightwing number 9 from DC. Captain America Sam Wilson number 15 from Marvel, and Grand Passion number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.